You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. More than 3 years ago, the Sacramento County Office of Education set out an ambitious goal to place a mental health clinician at every school in the county. That's roughly 300 campuses. The county superintendent joined Insight in the past about the centers of wellness and said that it wasn't really being done elsewhere in the state. Since its launch in the summer of 2020, progress has been slow, but there have been meaningful strides. CAP Radio Sacramento K-12 education reporter Shrishti Prabha has been following Sac County's rollout of mental health clinicians at schools and has a deeper understanding of the challenges and the bright spots in an initiative that will take years, even decades. Shrishti joins us with more about these hurdles and signs of promising potential. Hey, Shrishti.
Hi, Vicky.
So as I mentioned, this goes back years. The announcement from the Sacramento County Office of Education, SCOE, dates back to June of 2020. We've had the county superintendent on Insight about the Centers of Wellness in January of 2022. So that was 2 years ago. You have also joined us on Insight in the year since. So as you take a big, big step back, what do you think is most important for students and just more broadly the community to understand?
Yeah, I think the first thing is that not everything can be provided by the schools. And I think when I came and spoke about mental health in 2020, I mentioned that. I think local collaborations are super important. But obviously, COVID-19 exacerbated the youth mental health crisis. And so Sacramento County Office of Education had to kind of grapple with this shortage of mental health clinicians in its 300 schools. And at that time, and even now, they told me about this like bilateral approach of partnering with Medi-Cal to bring clinicians into the schools, and then also to create these school-based wellness centers that invest in recruiting students in high schools and helping them become licensed therapists so they can come back and serve the community. But that said, I know they want to do this, and I want them to do this, but the progress kind of stalled in 2022 when I last reported. It was 40 clinicians then, it's 40 clinicians now, which means it's kind of stagnated. They've maybe lost some, retained some. And the current projection indicates that even if they're adding, 10 clinicians a year, it's not going to be achieved until 2050, which is kind of scary. But schools like Ethel Baker Elementary, where I went, are demonstrating how these wellness centers can actually work if implemented.
So, I mean, as you just laid out, like there's challenges and hurdles that still exist. I mean, 2050 is a couple decades from now. But you've also been able, as you just mentioned, witness some of the benefits of what really is a culture shift in how schools approach mental and behavioral wellness when it comes to students. Can you give us some examples of what you encountered in your reporting and who you met?
That is my favorite part. So yes, Ethel Baker, whose students are 97% English language learners or qualify for free and reduced lunch, was one of the first to develop and pilot a school-based mental health program in 2020. So now we're checking in 2024. And when I went, the classes began their day with a community circle where they can share their feelings and kind of check in to see where they're at when they start their day. Here's what it looks like in Chris Acton's fifth grade classroom at the school, where they use a chart of emotions to describe how they're starting the day.
I feel goofy.
You feel goofy? Why is that?
Because I went to sleep at 5 and I barely got any hours of sleep and I couldn't sleep.
5 last night or 5 this morning?
5 in the morning.
Oh my goodness.
I feel happy because I like going to brain break to play soccer.
So they call time away from learning brain breaks, which I think is really cute. But it also destigmatizes the need of active time away from a desk. And then the check-in serves to see where the student is when they're coming in to learn. So sleeping at 5 a.m. might make it difficult, like she said.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And so I think it's great that they're doing this check-in and making sure the student is ready to learn. And here's an example of what that looks like also in a different form in Suchoi Seicho's fourth grade class in light of MLK Day.
I have a dream that everybody passes college.
I have a dream that world hunger would end.
I had a dream that world violence would end.
I have a dream that everyone around the world will understand that girls can like soccer and boys can wear dresses.
Oh, that's a good one.
I have a dream that everyone from other countries can have a green card so they can come to California.
I agree with that.
Yeah, I mean, and this is just such a wonderful space that is being given to students. Does this actually translate down to home life? Are parents noticing a difference in their children?
Absolutely they are. I spoke with a parent at Ethel Baker. Her name is Latrina Connor, and her family was going through kind of a tough time. She had three children, and all three have utilized the Wellness Center.
It's also people that you could confide in, that we could trust, if, you know, to seek other help, because it's questions that she'd be able to ask that I might not know to ask. For me, it's a very rewarding experience, and I appreciate all the help because I have seen a drastic change in my kids' behavior and their communication.
And her son, who graduated from Ethel Baker, has sought services at his new school.
So it has been challenging times, but other than that, we actually got through it. It worked out for us. My son even seeks for therapy at his new school, and he knows that he doesn't have to hide his feelings.
And in a conversation between me and Latrina's daughter, a sixth grader, Leannity Gillette, she explains how she's using the skills taught to her by the clinician on staff, Elizabeth Kirby.
Last time I was irritated and I couldn't focus on the math problem, and I was doing my homework at the same time.
What are some tricks that you've learned from Miss Elizabeth?
Well, I could either color and draw, or we have a Zen zone where I can go back there for a minute to play with some toys and read books. Mm.
You know, what I'm just learning from the students, also the parent, is that what they are taking in that class, it could just be a few moments. I mean, it pays dividends, like, throughout their life as they get older, which is great, but can be different if you haven't been to school in a while, like myself. So if you haven't been in a classroom for years or decades, what are the biggest changes that you notice from the way things were done to how they're done now?
Yeah, I'm only going into classrooms because this is my job. It's kind of amazing that I get to do it. They have Zen zones in the classroom, which is something Leannity just talked about. They're kind of usually in the back or to the side, but a student can take a break from learning if they're feeling anxious or frustrated or sad, and they have toys and anxiety tools there. There is also a wellness center room on site, which houses the clinician. And it has beanbags and fidget toys and art supplies. So from my understanding, any student can come into that space as well. But I think it's more about the approach and the climate of the school. And you need buy-in from all the adults.
Yeah. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. If you're just joining us, I'm talking with CAP Radio Sacramento education reporter Shrishti Prabha, who is updating the county's years-long push to create centers of wellness and place a mental health clinician at all 300 campuses in the county. So when this was announced back in June of 2020, the initial cohort was about 11 schools out of 300. 3.5 years later, you said that stalled a bit. So what is the number now?
Yes, it's 40 schools. You can find my compiled list in my story online. Interestingly, every district is represented except Elk Grove, which could mean two things. So the district might already have strong relationships with local organizations that can provide these services, or the district doesn't rank highly in the county's equity index, which is how we're determining where the school-based mental wellness centers are being put. And I think that makes sense. It's being put in communities that require it most first.
Mm. When you talk to staff on campus and just with the County of Education, what are you learning about the biggest reasons behind progress being slow and even stalled?
There are three major things. Funding, it's always funding, mental health professional shortages, and a need for a culture shift surrounding mental health.
Yeah, and this is a big lift, and we can't ignore the fact that it happened like right at the height and the peak of the pandemic, the onset of the pandemic in June of 2020. So when you talk to school staff, I mean, how do you get a better understanding of what needed to change at the foundational level, the lift that it really took to achieve what is a culture shift?
It was clearly a difficult task, and COVID complicated this more. Nathan McGill, principal at Ethel Baker, is kind of the driving force for culturally competent mental health supports on site. He mentions that they struggle to get the parents to understand trauma-informed practices in the schools.
When COVID happened, folks couldn't even come on campus. And so the sell for mental health and trusting your child with a person that you don't know to maybe get therapy was a big lift. And so when we kind of created conditions in each classroom that were a lot safer and had teachers really like talking about wellness, it made it safer for parents to feel it and believe it. And so the next step is really trying to like pull down stigma about mental health services for all of our families.
But consistent and representative support was key. Ava Gomez, a staffer at Ethel Baker, witnessed the gradual change at the school.
But also the difference that makes to the families, right, and seeing that, you know, the school is staffed with people that look like them, mm-hmm, and how much more buy-in we get,
right,
because they are now feeling comfortable in sharing their experiences and feel a sense of understanding and belonging, mm-hmm, and feel safer in sending their students to a school that's representative of their culture and community.
But the reason this school-based wellness site works best is because it's a team effort. Even now at Ethel Baker, technically only one clinician is serving 650 students. But because of the way mental health is embedded into the framework of the school, it focuses on prevention and students don't need to seek the clinician to get the help, or they have other adults in the space that can also help them.
Okay, yeah, that's a good... I'm glad you laid that out, because I'm like, one for 650? I mean, that sounds like a lot. I mean, do they have a realistic idea when they're going to accomplish this goal of having a clinician at every campus in the county?
No. Currently, it seems even if they're adding 10 clinicians, it'll take 25 years to make that happen. They're talking about the program as a startup with the hopes to prove its efficacy and get more funding, which is something they have been able to do. And just this last year, tiered mental health supports in schools, which is what Ethel Baker is modeling, was pushed in the state legislature and actually passed. So there should be money coming to the county to ramp up these services.
Yeah, funding is so important, and not one-time funding. You need sustainable funding for something like this. And I remember talking about that with the county superintendent, Dave Gordon, when he joined us about this like 2 years ago. And he said that they're using, at the time, like a pretty novel approach to fund this. They're using Medi-Cal funding. Remind us how this works.
Absolutely. I think it is super important to understand how this works. So the Office of Education is diving into the pool of Medi-Cal funding that is allocated to their students. So the Office of Education tells me that roughly 65% of the students in the county are on Medi-Cal. And so that can sustain and reimburse the salary of a clinician. But despite the need, only 6% of young people are accessing these services, and data suggests that 20% of school-aged kids have a diagnosed mental health disorder. So there's a huge disparity between access and the number of students actually receiving that service. So hopefully, you know, with more clinicians on site, that'll be something that'll be possible.
Yeah. In the meantime, are there alternatives that schools are turning to provide mental wellness while the county still works to scale up?
Yes. In the interim, efforts are being made to supplement. The collaborations involve collaborating with locally culturally responsive mental health programs, such as QSpot, which is focusing on LGBTQ+ youth. And Roberts Family Development Center has a girls and boys club focusing on boys and girls of color. The effectiveness of these programs and collaborations are actually being seen by Girls Club. Destiny Robbins, a lead therapist for the program, speaks to me about the need for Girls Club at MLK Technology Academy, which is in the Del Paso area. And she talks about how Girls Club's data reports positive outcomes for students attending the program.
You know, as a minority woman myself, I know what it feels like to be the only one in the room sometimes. So culturally sensitive programming is crucial. You know, it can make or break someone's life, their chances to thrive, you know.
And what she was saying is the concept, the idea of self-esteem, as you increase their self-esteem, they see positive results in decrease in anger, anxiety, and depression, as well as disruptive behavior.
Yeah, and even if you are feeling those disruptive behaviors, I think a lot of us have, we can relate to that. It's also good to have the tools to know how to navigate that in a healthy way. And so it's great to learn that there are organizations and even some campuses that are actually, you know, teaching that at a young age. So now we're more than 3 years into this program, as we've just learned from you. Far, far from over. What are you interested in following?
I'm interested in sustainable, culturally responsive mental health programming, maybe more collaborations, more absorption, more funding for them, an increase in school-based wellness centers. So I hope in the next year and a half after I report this, I can come back and tell you there's significantly more. And then I want more data, honestly, on students' mental health, which is a survey that only happens every 2 years. So the last time I reported, I had pretty robust data. This time, we're not totally sure what the climate of mental health for students is, but I'm looking forward to getting to know more about that.
Srishti, as always, thank you.
Thank you.
And that is CAP Radio Sacramento education reporter Srishti Prabha updating the county's years-long push to create centers of wellness and place a mental health clinician at all 300 campuses in the county. Still ahead, wanting to go to college is one thing. Figuring out applications, financial aid is another big lift. But there is help this weekend. We're going to preview the largest bilingual and binational university fair in Northern California. It's happening in Sacramento for thousands of students. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.